So it's mainly history that's not known, and it's early contact. I mean, there are Europeans who, for many reasons, either ran away from as convicts or were shipwrecked or simply got lost in the bush and for a period of time lived with Indigenous peoples in Australia and totally accepted and were, for all intents and purposes, saved. And some of them lived with Indigenous peoples for upwards of 30 years.
There's a trend that is common amongst a lot of them is when they actually came back into contact with other white colonizers at the time, they were reluctant to talk about their experience living in Indigenous communities.
Absolutely. A lot of these people came back with very positive experiences on how well they'd been treated and the wonderful lifestyle that they experienced. And also quite a number had gone through Indigenous ceremonial practices and been totally accepted into families and communities in that regard. And they were very reluctant to reveal aspects of those secret cultural practices. They didn't reveal that, and they also took up the fight of speaking out on behalf of the Indigenous peoples at a time of high conflict on the frontier.
The first story that you actually talk about is this Wilson.
John Wilson, who
tried to mediate and try to show the community that adopted him that it was actually a welcoming community and not a worrisome community. Trying to convince his fellow other white settlers of the opposite was quite a challenge for him.
Absolutely. I mean, he totally supported the Indigenous peoples that he'd become a part of.
There is a story also about this person going back and forth, and he actually mediated and saved some lives on both sides because
that's right. I mean, there was at one point that he basically led exploration parties out from First Settlement in regards to that and opened up access to west of Sydney because of his knowledge of country and his connection to the Indigenous communities.
In the book, you also say that some of these settlers went in these communities, they were adopted, given traditional names, and then married and fathered children.
Yep, that's right. So there was that acceptance. I mean, they talk about, we as Aboriginal people suffered through assimilation, but this was assimilation in reverse. I mean, these people were being accepted and indoctrinated into Indigenous culture and families and communities. And as you say, you know, there was, you know, taking on Indigenous names, Murrungurk, Bunbowie, Durumboy, Wacky, Geum. Anko, I mean, some of the characters throughout the book, I mean, had the Indigenous names. Some married, some had children with their Indigenous hosts. And many became, or certainly one of the most famous, of course, is William Buckley. I mean, he spent over 30 years with Indigenous communities down in Victoria. And he became a very proficient hunter as well and totally immersed in Indigenous practice and knowledge. And again, he was one of the very outspoken opponents of the colonisers when he returned to the settlement. And they eventually moved him from Victoria to Tasmania to try and get him out of the road of taking up the defence of Aboriginal people.
But the stories that actually were promoted at the time is that when these people who lived very peacefully, very respected in the communities that adopted them, when they came back into the white settlers' community, the stories that went around is that they seemed to abandon their families and their children with no regret, and the stories that were always propagated were those of warfare, cannibalism, and really savagery within the Indigenous communities. And yet,
it's not so much them, but the interpreters. I mean, so the people that have gone back, I mean, it's people either second-hand or third-hand writing these stories and these accounts who completely misinterpret and sensationalise the stories of these individuals. And the whole concept, I mean, of cannibalism in Aboriginal Australia, and also the fact of warfare is another one that historians have followed the path that Aboriginal people were, the populations were small because there were major warfares and battles fought here constantly. I mean, William Buckley has an account where there's his group of about 150, 200 Aboriginal people are confronted by another group of about 300 Aboriginal people. And the account that Buckley gives, which is then written up on his return, says there's a pitched battle and, you know, the war has been waged and, you know, but at the end of it, when you analyse the material, there's only three people died in the pitched battle of 500. Now, man, there's something not quite right there. You know, yeah. So, I mean, you've got 500 people, you know, in battle, and there's only three people died. There's something been missed. And in that account, Buckley also recounts that he was always kept at the back, out of the way by the women. He didn't actually see what went on. And in most instances, these were practices of, how can you say, law being practiced, and someone had committed a crime, and there was a process to go through, and people were punished. So that process fits more with, say, three people being killed in a pitched battle of 500. So again, as I said, there's sensationalised and misinterpreted accounts that were part of these stories when they were first written up.
One thing that's persistent is each time the settlers heard about fellow white people living within indigenous communities, there was always expeditions to find them and rescue them from captivity, whereas they seem to be actually happy and happily adopted and leading a peaceful life, and yet there were expeditions to get them out of those communities.
There certainly were in the accounts of, you know, there's many accounts of the missing white women. I mean, they used accounts of that, you know, white women had been abducted or white women had become lost in the bush, and they'd send out vigilante groups then. And I mean, these women, in many instances, weren't missing at all. They weren't even there. I mean, but they gave them a reason to go out into the bush and to really attack Aboriginal people and commit horrific crimes against Aboriginal people under false pretenses, because that wasn't the case. Although in our book, of course, there's a number of accounts. Barbara Thompson is one, and of course the very famous one of Eliza Fraser. But Eliza Fraser's story is very much a sensationalised account. And I mean, she only spent about 5 to 6 weeks in the wild all up as well.
One of them even says that her experience in captivity was not as bad as portrayed, because she was treated with respect.
Sensationalised completely. Still today, these stories are false. I mean, anthropologists, archaeologists, most people today would completely, you know, discount those stories of cannibalism, and you know, that have been sensationalised for such a long time.